Have you ever done everything right, but at the very end made the biggest mistake of your life?
Well, don't worry. Now there's a way you can make people instantly forget about that mistake as if it never happened.
For a limited time only, and fresh from the Edmonton Oilers gift shop, comes the Chris Russell mask.
Just put on your Chris Russell mask, like this, and all your biggest worries will magically disappear and you'll be forgiven right away. It's great for forgetting birthdays.
Hey, Pally, I just bought you this birthday present.
Dude, my birthday was 3 weeks ago, what the hell? Aw, thanks. I really appreciate the effort, you're swell.
It's also great for those times when you overcook dinner.
The Christmas turkey is ready, guys, come and get it.
Dude, this thing is burned beyond recognition. It's all smoky and it's on fire practically. That's okay. I don't mind cranberries and ashes. I'm sure it'll taste good. I really appreciate your effort.
And it's the perfect addition to any circumcision. Here is young Shlomo. The bruise was a great success.
Whoa, Doc, did you cut a little too much? That's okay. I always wanted Shlomo to be Shoshana anyway. I do appreciate your effort.
First 20 customers receive a free lithograph, Todd McClellan apology letter, and a framed autograph photo of an analytics nerd. So let me get this straight. I need to totally understand this because my mind is completely and utterly blown. One of the top scoring teams in the NHL scores one goal against the lowly Vancouver Canucks, and the other team, which can't score worth its own life and very existence this season, somehow manages 10. Where am I? What is this bizarro universe we're in?
It is bizarro universe. 29th overall. It's funny because you were just mocking my team, saying that they were 29th overall in goals for. And just a few minutes later, Hockey Night in Canada showed a graphic on the Leafs broadcast showing that the Leafs were the number one scoring team in the NHL. And then lo and behold, at the end of the night, the Leafs score one goal, and the Montreal Canadiens, led by the great Paul Byron, scores 10 goals. It's incredible. And the crazy thing is December 2nd, 1995, 22 years ago to the day yesterday, was, of course, the anniversary of the 11-1. Patrick Waugh changed the face of the franchise for the next 30 years. Debacle.
It truly was. I mean, it changed everything. It changed the way that, you know.
Yeah, and in true tardigrade fashion, 22 years later, the Montreal Canadiens beat those same Detroit Red Wings 10-1. It's incredible how history works and kind of almost repeats itself. And again, a kind of reverse bizarro universe sort of, you know, happening. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Listen, call it what it is. It's hockey gods. It's the only way to explain it. There is no rhyme. There is no rhyme nor reason to understand how your team scores 10 goals. Granted, the Detroit Red Wings are not exactly the best team out there. They have their own struggles. But you gotta wonder, poor Henrik Zetterberg, did you read his comments after the game? He was like, I've never been this humiliated. He said he'd never even seen anything like that in his professional career. Not good times in Motown.
No, and I feel bad for Henrik. He's, you know, of course, from the glory years of the Red Wing era, and now he's one of the captains that's kind of, you know, he's not going, he was going down as one of the great captains in Red Wings history, but now in recent times he's being associated with a terrible Red Wings team, and I feel bad for him.
He's got his cups. I don't feel that bad. You know who I feel bad for? I feel bad for the Sedin twins, because even though, notwithstanding how well the Canucks played last night, they're not going to win anything this year, and to see them kind of put out to pasture, wanting to finish their careers in their comfort schedule, comfort life that they've got in Vancouver, when clearly they've still got it in the tank. I mean, I love the fact that last night you pointed out that they were passing behind the net like an Electronic Arts NHL 18 video game. Mm-hmm. They were passing behind the net. Mm-hmm. Who passes behind the net in the NHL today? Nobody. It's
great.
Dangerous.
They went back and forth cross ice behind the net. That's incredible, and it confused all your Maple Leafs.
Are you kidding? The Leafs looked horrible last night. They couldn't get their game going. There was no momentum, no flow. Your team, on the other hand, showed up, and within 3 minutes, I was like, okay, what's going on? And then after 10 minutes, I'm like, you know what? Habs fan is like in bliss and heaven, pantless, running around happy. And then by the end of the night, you were like a kid in some kind of candy store with goals and candy.
Goals, candy, pantless, neighbors complaining. Yeah, it was a great night. Fiasco. It was a great night.
So what does this mean now? Your team has finally come somewhat full circle this season. They went from their horrific start to everyone. I mean, we've had everyone on our show now, whether it was Andrew Berkshire, Mark Dumont, Andrew Walker, J.D. Bunkus, you name it, personalities from both sides of both provinces. And now here you are in a playoff spot, one game over 500 by today's NHL standards, and my hands right now are doing quotations. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? You must be happy. Your Christmas has come early. Congratulations. Joyous Noel.
Yeah, I'm happy, and everyone, and including myself, I even wrote an article about it and tweeted about it saying that the Montreal Canadiens needed to play 630-plus hockey after their terrible start to reach the 95-point plateau.
And what are they at?
Looking at the team, I said, this isn't a team that can accomplish that. I didn't think they could do that. And here we are, I don't know, 6 weeks later, maybe?
And they played 750 hockey, basically.
I don't know the exact percentage. I saw it, but they're close to 700 hockey since.
Oh, jeez.
Which, of course, yes, unsustainable. But this hot run is exactly what they needed to even put them in a playoff picture. And that coinciding with, of course, with the Detroit Red Wings not being the Detroit Red Wings of the 90s and early 2000s, the Ottawa Senators blowing up their team for some reason after they traded Kyle Turris, they're not the same. The Boston Bruins, yes, they have got four games in hand, and they are possibly the challenge for the third spot. I mean, things are looking up for Montreal. They're actually
looking up
for Montreal, despite me. I was on the edge of a cliff. I was really disappointed.
You were
to blow it all up.
I think you were actually on your way down, but this wonderful hand from the heavens came in the form of St. Price, because we talked about this, we did sketches about this, we had guests on. We all knew that as Carey Price goes, so do the Montreal Canadiens. So is there really any surprise that the highest paid and generally regarded best goaltender of this generation is getting it done? I'm not surprised. As much as I wanted to point out all your team's deficiencies, you can't deny that when Carey Price is healthy and pivoting and going left and right and doing this and that like he always does, he's unbeatable. He really is.
Yeah. You said surprise, and I still think there is a surprise to Carey Price's game. Yes, he brings the confidence. He lets the Canadiens relax a bit and concentrate more on scoring goals versus, oh, God, we really need to defend because we don't have a capable goaltender behind us. But I'm surprised that Carey rebounded in such a way that he did, because a lot of us thought that he was more seriously injured than he was, and that the return after the five or six game absence, would actually be more of a slow, gradual return to Carey Price greatness or the bad Carey Price that we saw at the beginning of the season. But he's actually come back and looked amazing. I didn't expect that at all. I thought maybe he would be playing, you know, 920 save percentage hockey. He's up to, I don't know what it is, it's like 970 plus save percentage hockey. It's crazy. Again, yes, unsustainable, but really, really well timed and needed for them to go on a hot run, because they needed to bank as many points as possible before things start to level off and become the 500 to 550 hockey team that a lot of people still think they are.
Well, and we knew that the Christmas barometer was coming up, and that would be the ultimate factor in determining whether or not they were going to compete in the new year. And I'm glad they did. I'm glad that they demonstrated, look, hockey players have their pride. And when you're Carey Price and you see the media invading your private life, questioning your teammates' commitment to one another, asking whether or not this team has the fortitude, the gumption, he's got it. He's always had it. And when you combine it with other character players like Shea Weber and Max Pacioretty, and they are character players, they care about winning. They're not just mailing it in. If you watch them every night, you see the effort. It's nice to see it finally translating into results. And last night was kind of like one of those, Dust Bowl barren farmlands where you haven't gotten any rain for like, it seems like 3 months, and then the skies just opened up, and then you, like at the end of Shawshank Redemption, mm-hmm. were like, oh, my team, I'm free. I've crawled through this tunnel, and now I can't wait for Morgan Freeman to join me on a strange island somewhere in the middle of the Pacific.
Yeah, that was me. Yes, yes. And it's funny that you mention here's the thing about the streak. So the first four games of the winning streak were without Shea Weber.
Yep.
The last two wins of the current five-game streak are featured 6 goals plus 10 goals, so 16 goals, and that's without their arguably most talented point-getter in Jonathan Drouin. And of course, throughout those 5 games, only one of those goals featured a goal from Max Pacioretty. So that's actually very encouraging.
Amazing.
That they're being able to do what they're doing without the help of some of their best offensive players. That's really encouraging.
That really is. That really is. And meanwhile, while you're doing all that, the Maple Leafs finished up their West Coast trip. Obviously, I'm not thrilled. Losing to the Canucks, come on. That's a game they need to pick up, especially when they have a day off going into it. But listen, give credit to the Canucks. The Leafs took care of the Flames. They took care of the Oilers. Now they're going to see the Oilers and the Flames again next week at home. And that's where I'd like to see some consistency. Because I don't know about you, but I'm getting tired of all these Mike Babcock line juggling justifications that he knows what he's doing. Personally, it's starting to feel like a magic eight ball, and he's just trying to find the right combination. Because I think you'll agree, this Maple Leafs team still isn't firing on all cylinders.
No, I do agree with that they're not firing on all cylinders. But again, I think I talked about it in our previous podcast where you just know it's going to come around. It's funny, and I'm not saying that I'm a genius by any...
Neither am I. Don't worry.
But when I said that William Nylander was on the fourth line, I said, it's just going to turn around. Don't worry, it's just going to turn. And then that night in Calgary, he scored a beautiful goal. And I think the same thing's going to happen with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Talent, like cream, always rises to the top. And I can't believe I'm giving you kudos, but I wouldn't worry too much. I think Babcock's just, you know, he's making sure that he's still running the ship. He is the untouchable one. And making sure that the guys are on their toes and just pure talent isn't going to carry them all the way. They still need to listen to what he has to say and follow his systems and make sure that they can become the team that he wants them to become.
Well, speaking of creamy talent and rising to the top, guess who's on our show? Steve Dangle Glynn, the man, the myth, the legend, the high-octane, kinetic, frenetic talent. He's come to our show. He's chatted with us. How do you feel about that?
It was awesome. It was really, really awesome to have him on the show. He made us laugh within the first 15 seconds. He gave some great stories and also touched a bit on, personally about his growth as a super huge social media hockey icon and, a regular on Hockey Night in Canada. So it's really, really good that and really appreciate that we got him on.
So let's keep this rolling. We've got some great rants lined up. And then, of course, our interview with Steve. And at this point, it looks like you're going to have a wonderful Sunday. Are you still, like, reciting all the goals that were scored in chronological order? Or are you just kind of randomly walking around with a stupid grin on your face?
Yep. That will be my reciting prayer every night as I go to bed, just like Arya Stark and her people that she wants dead recitals.
You know, sometimes I wonder what it must have been like for Steve Smith when he scored into his own net off the back of Grant Fuhr back in the mid-80s, thus costing the Edmonton Oilers, which should have been a legitimate dynasty. What you are is a team that unfortunately had to deal with the reality of bad things happening sometimes in a hockey game. And that's why I do feel bad for Chris Russell. He played a very, very tough game, competitive, doing all the right things, and then right at the end made an inexplicably horrible mistake that ended up costing his team the 2 points, and literally the 2 points. Makes one wonder if the Edmonton Oilers can recover and find themselves only 1 point out of a playoff spot, whether or not this one will come back to haunt them. But what surprised me was the way that everyone kind of tried to normalize the situation by basically saying that, look, he's a great player and he's an important part of our team and we love him and therefore he should be kind of somewhat immune to a lot of the criticism. And look, I'm all for protecting the frail nature of any type of athlete who's found himself under siege as a result of fan frustration. But the fact remains that it was his mistake that cost the Oilers that game. And not coming out and saying, look, it was something that shouldn't have happened, almost seems to accept the fact that in the end the effort is more important than the outcome. Well, I've got news for you. The outcome is everything when it comes to professional sports, whether the fans feel they're getting top dollar value for their money. Well, I feel for Chris Russell. I have zero sympathy coming as a Toronto Maple Leafs fan who's had to deal with basically what's been 50 years of nincompoopery and all sorts of excuses as to why players aren't a number one center a number one D-man or a number one goalie. Sometimes you just have to man up and accept your fate. And somehow normalizing it just seems like it's all part of this culture we now live in where, hey, if the effort's okay, the outcome doesn't matter. Here's your A+ anyways.
Carey Price is the most valuable player for the Montreal Canadiens. Breaking news, it isn't. Everyone knows this. Without Carey Price, Montreal is a very, very mediocre team. Carey Price is the meal ticket. Carey Price is about to embark on an 8-year, $84 million contract. So why are the Montreal Canadiens not doing everything in their power to protect Carey Price? I just don't get it. The other day, Nate Thompson, journeyman fourth liner of the Ottawa Senators, goes in and cross-checks Carey Price, and nobody does a thing about it. Last year in the playoffs, Rick Nash goes and crashes Carey Price. Nobody touched Rick Nash. Montreal needs to send a message to protect their all-star player. Without Carey Price, they know he's nothing. They know they're nothing. And they're not doing enough about it. And here's the problem. Just the other day, I was complaining about goals that were called back that actually should be goals just because a goalie was slightly nudged. It's a catch-22 scenario for the NHL. Slightly nudge a goalie, and a goal's disallowed. Yet we want more goals. Yet, we also want to protect our goalies. So how do we do it? Do we do the European thing where any skate in the crease results in a whistle and a face-off outside of the zone? I don't think we want to go that way. My thing is that from a very young age, we're all taught to go to the net. I still want that. We all want to go to the dirty areas. So let's keep that. However, any sort of contact with the goalie, falling into the goalie, accidentally on purpose, doing the Brendan Gallagher thing, should result in a penalty. Yeah, I think some of the stuff that Brendan Gallagher does should result in penalties. We need to protect our goalies. We need to protect the goalies just like the NFL protects their quarterbacks. They're the meal ticket for a lot of teams. There's only, 31 starting goaltenders in the NHL? They're a rare breed. We need to protect them. The NHL needs to step up and make sure the rules are in place to protect goalies, yet somehow balance it with the correct rules to make sure goal scoring is still on the rise.
You know, it's funny, Kamal. Last week we had arguably one of the biggest Montreal Canadiens enthusiasts that you'll find on the planet in Marc Dumont. And I thought to myself all weekend, man, how unfair is that on a show of called Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan that I've got to listen to you and him gush about the Montreal Canadiens? So I've decided what better way to take a new direction than to have Steve Dangle Glynn, a preeminent hockey YouTuber, a really popular blogger on Sportsnet, and a guy who has his own podcast called the Steve Dangle Podcast on the show. Steve, thanks for joining us on the show.
Hey, thanks. You know, it's funny you should mention Mark. Allow me to gush about him for a minute instead of gushing about the Habs at very least. So right after this phone call, I need to go to the laptop repair place because I spilled an entire bottle of water on my laptop. The last time I was with Mark was in Montreal. I had just flown there and, was going for this Leafs game, this engagement with Rogers, and I'm getting settled in my hotel. I'm like, oh, this is fancy. You know, the bed's nice and big, nice and comfortable. Ooh, they have bathrobes. You know, a sign of any good hotel room is they have bathrobes. I think I'm just going to relax now and pull out my laptop. And, oh, my God, I left the laptop on the plane. So I was at a sandwich shop with Andrew Berkshire and Marc Dumont, as I lamented the fact that I had just made an extraordinarily expensive mistake. And I got a phone call from Air Canada saying that they had actually found my laptop. So then I finished up my sandwich with Mark, left for the airport, picked up my laptop, hugged it on the ground, and luckily didn't spill any water on it for about a year and a half.
Wow. Nice. So, Steve, you mean a flight attendant from Air Canada didn't actually come running to you with your laptop to meet you at that restaurant that you were at?
Yeah, I didn't get a commercial moment, but you know what? I'll take it. I'm not going to dump on them for luckily covering up for my mistake.
Yeah, especially awesome. Considering that that's something WestJet would do with Aaron Sanchez. Like, Aaron Sanchez would come running and saying, hey, WestJet owners, they're also... their owners and their people, and they love their company. So
That's cool, though, that you were able to get it back because, you know, I'm looking at my notebook and I'm thinking this thing is getting long in the tooth and I hope it doesn't, you know, end up malfunctioning on me while we're doing this interview. So, you know, as someone who's constantly worried about such things, I mean, you're always on the go. You're, in my opinion, having you on the show is wonderful for me as a Leafs fan because I love your energy and I love your emotion. Where does that come from? What inspires you every day to do your LFRs and to get the internet community excited about the Toronto Maple Leafs? Where do you get that inspiration from?
Thanks, Derek. It's my job now, so very fortunate to... No, that's not true. You know, I've been a passionate Leaf fan, you know, my entire life, and they're a team that drives you nuts. Here's how I categorize hope, okay? My parents used to always record, pirate, basically. They used to pirate specials that would air on Global TV up here in Canada and, you know, the Christmas specials and all that. And one of them was the Disney animated Robin Hood. Remember where Robin Hood is a fox or whatever and running through the forest? Now, our VHS of that show cut off right before the end. So we would always watch 90% of Robin Hood. And it was at a very dramatic part, and you didn't know whether the good guy or the bad guy was going to survive. But every single day, I would watch it anyway. And that is life as a Leaf fan. Because you're always like, I watched the tape every single day going, maybe this is the day where we get the rest of the show. I don't know. I was just some stupid kid. I was like, maybe this is the day where we get the rest of the movie and there's a happy ending. And that's what I've been waiting for my entire life as a Leafs fan. Maybe they'll beat the Kings. Nope. Maybe they'll beat the Canucks. Nope. Maybe they'll beat the Hurricanes. Nope. 4-1 against Boston. That should do. Nope. And I guess that's where the passion comes from. It's being driven nuts and hope, such mad hope. Like, I always think it must be so boring to be a Penguins fan or a Blackhawks fan. Oh. All that victory, silly. No, I need a little bit of excitement in my life. The real question for me is, when they finally win, what the hell do I do? I think I'm just going to have to, like, backpack the mountains and grow a beard and discover myself and... Wow. You know, wax poetically about myself like Jim Carrey and walk on the moon.
Because some people believe we haven't been there yet, by the way. But come on, go ahead, shoot him a question.
But Steve, I mean, there's got to be positive feelings for sure. And I mean, is there a part of you that's happy to see what's going on in Toronto compared to what's going on in Montreal? Is there a little bit of, you know, now how do you guys like it?
Well, you know, what's going on in Montreal is just fascinating to me as an outsider. I don't like to see any fan base suffer unless they seem full of themselves. So, you know, there's a... Not all Oilers fans, because Oilers fans suffered for a very long time. But there is a sect of Oilers fans who were very nasty to me last year, you know, with their first taste of actual success and power in over a decade. And now that they suck again, I'm kind of like, well, yeah, here's some crocodile tears for you. Montreal, though, like, even though they're the Leafs, you know, most historic rival, I mean, they're one of the most likable fan bases out there for me, and I know that's sacrilege for me. But you know, they watch my videos regardless. Like, sometimes even if the Habs aren't playing, and I just feel like they're a tortured fan base because for the most part, I find most Habs fans, it's not like they're delusional and think all the moves that the Habs are making are awesome. I think they want to see change, but boy, are they just shoving Marc Bergevin into the bedrock of this team. And you want to talk about the most untouchable GM in this league? How has he survived? It's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So do you think, Steve, that he should be removed of his duties? What are your thoughts on that?
I do. But, I mean, I think they're... You know, it's funny. Sometimes having a player as good as Carey Price is almost to the detriment of the team, because there were so many teams that the Habs have iced over the past few years that weren't all that good, but he just propped them up and propped them up and made them amazing. And when he was amazing, it was, okay, well, let's ignore all the flaws. He's amazing. And then when he got injured and the team was crap, it was, well, Carey Price is injured. And now this year, all the complaints were they're not deep enough on defense. You lost too many guys. You don't have enough guys at the middle. You don't have enough firepower up front. You're going to have a hard time scoring. And then they had all of that, but Carey Price was playing at the worst he's played in his career. And people said, oh, we'll just wait until Carey Price gets back on track. But what? What are you talking about? They've had a crap team for a half decade. They've been as good or as bad as Carey Price. Why not let another GM in there, let him do what he can do, and maybe, just maybe, you'll have a good team playing in front of Carey Price. And I can't imagine a good team playing in front of Carey Price at his best is stoppable. I can't imagine that's not a cup-worthy team.
Yeah. Sorry, I know this is supposed to be Leaf-centric, but one more question for you about the Habs, Steve, because I saw on your podcast, and for those who haven't listened to it, you do talk a little bit about whether Montreal should be trading Carey Price. Could you enlighten those of us who haven't heard your opinion on that, what your thoughts were?
Well, he's, again, one of those players who is just too entrenched in the team to move, whether he's good or bad, I think. And you also can't trade the guy before his extension even kicks in. So basically the conversation we were having was, of course he's not going to get traded. But if you were going to do it, like there's a few buts there. And the biggest but to me is if you do trade him, you're undeniably admitting defeat and that you're rebuilding. And if you're rebuilding, that means you're unhappy with the team that you've built. And if you're unhappy with the team that you've built, then you have to fire Mark Bergevin. But the other thing for me is what I compared trading Carey Price to. In today's NHL, where there's a salary cap and with his extension kicking in next year, it's like if you wanted to give me a Christmas gift and your idea of the best gift to give me was a redwood tree, you know, and I'd be like, well, how the hell are you going to get this to me? Like, I can't fit a redwood tree in my backyard. Oh, well, don't you want this redwood tree? No, of course I do. I'm a big fan and it looks beautiful, but I can't fit it. How are you going to get it here? So, like, I have no idea what a Carey Price trade would even look like. The conversation didn't get too deep because it's one of those things that you don't even let yourself say because it sounds so silly. Like, trading Carey Price, it's not going to happen. It's just not. Unless it is, because Montreal's crazy.
And I feel like Christmas has come early for me as I get to listen to Habs fan Ramon chatting with Steve Dangle about the Montreal Canadiens. Like, at this point, some of our Leafs listeners are like, holy cow, this is some kind of weird, bizarro universe show. Let's talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs for a second here, Steve. And specifically, we know you to be someone who's been following this team pretty much your entire natural life. It resonates with almost everything you do on the web. It's all about the Leafs. It's all about the passion that presumably unites us all. And I'm wondering, was that what you were feeling when Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock brought this all together, first told the entire community, hey, it's going to take a long time before we are credible. There's going to be a lot of pain. Remember that? They talked about the pain and the suffering. And here we are, 12 months into a rebuild, and at one point Vegas is choosing the Leafs to be the favorites to win the Stanley Cup. How ridiculous is that in your mind, and what does that say about the time-space continuum?
It's still bizarro world to me because, you know, like my boss last year when the Leafs started to make a bit of a run of it, he asked me, he goes, you know, what are you going to do when the Leafs are finally good? And I kind of laughed, and then I tried to think of an answer to that question, and I couldn't come up with an answer. So, you know, now that the Leafs are a top five team in the league, like, it's funny, I still find myself complaining about losses. because that's just what I'm used to doing. I'm like, well, they won the game, but they got outshot, and oh, when are they going to learn? It's bizarre. It's still bizarre, and I don't know how to act. I still can't believe, like, there are certain things I look at. Brendan Shanahan in the Leafs management box is really weird. Lou Lamoriello in Leafs gear is super weird. Mike Babcock behind the bench is weird. Like, I feel like I'm watching the hockey version of Space Jam. Like, the only way you could possibly get all these guys on one team is in a movie. And but it's real life, and they're on my team. I don't get it. You know, for years, we always had, oh, this guy's going to be coming to the Leafs, or that guy's going to be coming to the Leafs, and they're going to find a way to get Bobby Ryan and Jeff Carter and Logan Couture, and they're going to put the ball on the same line, and Joe Thornton's going to be the captain coach. And then the Babcock rumors were swirling, and it finally happened. It actually freaking happened. So,
yeah.
And that was now 3 years ago almost. So I'm still having trouble coming to grips with it. Now what I find myself doing in typical Leaf fan fashion is I look at the Leafs record, or I look at a game that they won but maybe didn't play that well in, or I'll look at the Leafs page on capfriendly.com and their cap situation going forward, and I just keep going, all right, how are they going to screw this up? Because it was years of unrealistic optimism for a crap team. And now what I have is, I think, unrealistic pessimism for a good team. And I don't know. One of these days they're going to do a fascinating study on my brain.
Yeah, no question that there must be some added pleasure, I would think, in seeing how the old guard are doing from previous administrations. What I mean by that is, are you like me, and whenever you see JVR or Bozak or Gardner do well, you say to yourself, you know, Kadri, these are guys that were associated with losing or you know, not being able to meet expectations. And now all of them, literally all of them, have flourished under Babcock. It truly is the Babcock effect. We've done sketches where we call Mike Babcock the untouchable one for a reason. He truly is something special as a coach.
He really is. And actually, it's funny. We sort of talked about this last show, too, where I feel like every year Babcock picks maybe a player or two where he goes, okay, this is the guy that I'm going to put through the ringer. This is the guy that is my major project, and he's not going to like me this year, but he's going to come out of it a better player. In year one, that player was definitely Nazem Kadri. He's like, we need you to be a shutdown center. I need you to shoot more. And remember, he was shooting like 2%, and everyone's like, what the hell is up with Kadri? Despite the fact that he was the least like best player on, he's the best player on the league's last place team, and a team that meant to be in last place, so I don't know what everyone was complaining about. And then last season, it was definitely Morgan Riley. Morgan Riley was definitely a project of his, you know, wouldn't put him on the power play, only made him kill penalties, put him in the hardest situations, his numbers suffered as a result. But then when the playoffs came around, and now this season, look at him. Look at him. Yeah. That's a monster. And I think the other guy he was really hard on last year was William Nylander, while he just kind of let Matthews and Marner do their thing. This year it started as Marner, and now I think it's Nylander again that he's working on. But you know who maybe gets a pass by some, but it's funny, people aren't talking about him the way I think they should be, is Nikita Zaitsev. I think Nikita Zaitsev is Babcock's big project on defense this year signed that massive contract. I think if Babcock plays Zaitsev like this last season, Zaitsev might not resign. You know what? I don't want to kill more penalties than I knew existed. That doesn't sound fun to me. But I look at the way Zaitsev's deployed this year by Babcock, and it reminds me of how Riley was deployed last year. Is that the best thing for the team right now? Maybe not, but it might be the best thing for Zaitsev in the long run.
Sure.
Steve, you for just sure. talked about a little bit about the Leafs defense, and of course the plethora of Leafs forwards. Does one of the forwards, or will the Leafs move one of the forwards to shore up the defense? Will that happen this year, or is that maybe too premature? And is that something that might happen, say, over the summer for next season?
This is an argument we have every single podcast. So the Leafs keep saying that they're sticking to the plan, right? Mm-hmm. Excuse me. They keep saying that they're sticking to the plan. And, of course, they also say the plan changes every day. But if you're sticking to the plan, that means you're still in a rebuild, which means you couldn't possibly lose JVR, Bozak, and Komarov for nothing and feel good about it. So trading them for futures, I don't know how comfortable I am with that, but trading them for defense, that might be the logical move. But the arguments my co-hosts always throw forward is, well, look at the stupid moves that teams make every single year for players who are on expiring contracts. Like, the Leafs gave up a second-round pick for Brian Boyle. And Brian Boyle was a key part of getting the Leafs to the playoffs, you know, why they looked so good against the Capitals in round one. But at the end of the day, they paid a second-round pick for, I think it was 33 regular season games and 6 playoff games. With JVR, Bozak, and Komarov, if you wanted, you could look at it as, well, okay, these are our buys, and we don't need to spend anything. But I still think they're going to buy it on top of that anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested to see what they do. Because if you have you just been paying attention to the Marlies at all this year?
Yeah, for sure.
A little bit.
They're on a 7-game winning streak right now. They have probably 2 of the top 5 goalies in the league. Their defense is ridiculous, and they're scoring. Like, the Marlies are stacked to the point where I don't even know if it's good for development, because they're not getting a realistic view of, like, competition. They're not getting a realistic view of adversity. All they do is win. So I would love to see their forwards or even a defender or two get a shot with the big club in a big role, because I think they can do some damage. You know, a guy like Andreas Janssen, I would love to see in some kind of JVR role. What interests me, though, about the Marlies and the Leafs' future plans, one, Timothy Liljegren is on pace to be, I think, the highest scoring 18-year-old defenseman in AHL history.
Really?
Yes, but the other thing I'm very interested in is you can usually take Babcock at his word, and he's, for an organization that's so tight-lipped, he's actually very revealing if you pay close enough attention. Now, I listen to him, you know, every morning skate I watch on YouTube, every post-game, every practice skate, whatever, I listen to what he has to say. And he keeps, in very, very passively, but he just gushes about the Marlies defense. And a couple times, kind of without warning, he's praised Renat Valiev, who I think played 10 games with the Leafs the year that they finished dead last. Now, he typically plays on the right side, but he's a left-handed shot. So I think that's kind of to his detriment. But whenever I see him fidgeting with, do I want Carrick, do I want Pulak? Do I want Carrick, do I want Pulak? Well, I got a guy who's green, who might be something someday, but he makes a mistake. Or I got Pulak, who can barely skate anymore, and the Leafs seem to lose every game that he plays. I wonder if the Leafs give Valiev a look. You know, everyone's focused on the Kapanens of the world, but I think that might be the next guy that Babcock has his eye on.
You know, it's funny. It's like you're describing a completely different culture, a completely different cultural movement almost, because as long-suffering Leafs fans, I can't remember a time when I could feel as proud about the development side with the minor league system along with the actual major league product doing well. It's almost like this conflux of awesome forces that have all come together, and Mike Babcock truly is being given credit not just for leading it, but you could argue that he is the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He is the field marshal that's going to go ahead and point the ship in the right direction for the first time. Hopefully that'll get us to some realistic form of playoff success, sustained success.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is pretty strange, eh? And then whenever people talk about, you know, the need for a Leafs captain, I'm like, no, they don't. They're a top five team in the league without a captain. The Marlies are first place in the American Hockey League. They don't have a captain. You know, it's funny how that works, isn't it? But the captain is, it doesn't matter how you look at it. The captain is Mike Babcock, or it's Sheldon Keefe, or it's Lou Lamoriello, or it's Brendan Shanahan. Could be any of those guys. I don't care. Just win, baby. And the other thing to the idea, just to get back to it, of the Leafs trading JVR for a big defensive part, the thing that worries me the most about trading the sun and the moon for defensive health, like, people have been talking about, like, Drew Doughty and all these crazy big parts. I don't mind a playoff rental help on defense. I think that'd be kind of cool. I don't know what player that would be. I don't know what that would look like exactly. I have no problem with that. But in terms of long term, the answer is hopefully already in the system. It's a guy like Travis Dermott on the left, or, you know, a stopgap prospect like Valiev on the right, or, like I said, Timothy Liljegren, who is supposed to be a steal at number 17. He's potentially going to break the record for scoring by a 18-year-old defenseman in the AHL. I think the current record holder is Slavoj Voynov with 22 points. And I think he's already got like 7 or 8 or something like that. So the only worry I have about making a long-term move, signing a guy to a monstrous $6, $7, $8, $9 million per year deal is, well, what do you have this kid for then? But yeah. I think with the Leafs, their view is just more. They signed Rosen and Borgman. And, you know, what I was saying to myself during the summer is, well, if one of them doesn't make the team, which it looks like is going to be the case, then one of them might be unhappy. And then Rosen got sent down on the Marlies, and I said, well, one of them might be unhappy. And then one of the co-hosts of my podcast was like, well, who cares? It's the best thing for the team. You know, and there was this report from Elliot Friedman. Oh, they're going to sign this right-handed defender from the KHL named Igor Ozhiganov. We'll see how he goes. And I go, well, what if he doesn't make the team? He might be unhappy. They go, who cares? More surplus. It's whatever's best for the team. If a good player doesn't make the team, good. That means he needs to be great. You know, Josh Levo is a good player. He should be playing every night. Too bad. You need to be great to play for the Leafs. And that's the beauty of them right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Steve, Ari and I are big admirers of yours and how far you've come. You've got 71,000 YouTube subscribers and interviewed some great people over the years. And what we wanted to know is, what's been your biggest thrill so far? Has it, and I'm going to give you three choices. Was it having Ron McLean on your show, appearing on Hockey Night in Canada, or appearing on the Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan podcast?
Easily the third one. What's it called?
Nice. I knew that. It was beautiful.
Appearing on Hockey Night in Canada was really cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the way I kind of look at it is, you know, a lot of people, there's a Dr. Dre appearance on a Kendrick Lamar record, and he leaves a voicemail on Kendrick Lamar's voicemail. And he goes, you know, remember the first time you came to the house, you said you wanted one just like mine. But remember, anybody can get it. The hard part is keeping it. And then he swears and says some words that I'm not sure if I can't say on the show. But, you know, so getting a little shout out on Hockey Night is cool. But I think the real moment where I'm like, oh, here I am, that would be being on it regularly. So in that case, I'm going to say having Ron McLean on the podcast.
Yeah.
Just because, like, you know, so I went to the 2010 Olympics. And Nike sent me, but it was one of my first things that I had ever done professionally. I was still in school. I was still in my fourth year of school in 2010. And, you know, I felt like a fish out of water. And, you know, sometimes I'd be in these scrums and people would look at me like, who the hell is this kid? And I almost felt like I was doing an impression of an adult. so it's been difficult to get. It's been a long time. It's been a lot of effort over many years to sort of get the approval of certain people in mainstream. And there's people who are really nice to me today that weren't exactly the nicest to me maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, but they still knew who I was. So it was getting Ron McLean on the show was kind of the nod of all nods that, you're not necessarily one of us, you're not necessarily, mainstream or a blogger or whatever, but you can sit with us. You know what I mean? Like it felt like you can sit at this table. And I mean, beyond all that, enough about me, Ron McLean was freaking amazing. And I think a lot of people really liked his appearance on the show. I think a lot of people who were prepared to hate it ended up loving it. And, I mean, there's no bigger feather in your cap than to be able to say, well, I mean, Ron McLean came on. Like, now I feel like we can get anybody on the show.
Well, it was
really enjoyable. All right. Yeah, it was really enjoyable, and you guys did an awesome job on that as well.
Thank you. I thought so. Adam Wilde, who's the co-host, is so good at interviewing people. It's, I find myself whenever we have a guest on, I have to remind myself, you're not watching the show, idiot. You got to ask some questions. So it's that's to me is the main challenge when we have guests on, is not letting Adam, do the entire thing. So, but then I force myself to ask a question, and it's stupid compared to his. So, Adam is he forces me to be better, and I think that's the kind of people you should surround yourself with.
Oh, that's extremely well said and so true. Chemistry is so important, especially when doing this, and just the way you described the way the masses accept you as a legitimate hockey source. It takes time, it takes effort, and obviously having Ron McLean on doesn't hurt because it's an acknowledged respect for all the hard work that you're doing. And believe you me that Kamal and I appreciate it every time we listen or consume anything you have to offer, especially after you pour a half a liter of water on your notebook and still come on our show. So that's in itself an astonishing feat of respect right there.
Yeah, well, let's go to the store and see if it still works.
I was going to say 3 hours from now, you're cursing us because your notebook is done and you're delayed in all your work. But you know what? We deserve that. So
they said if I got it here half an hour earlier, it would have worked.
Promises, eh? Steve, we really appreciate you taking the time coming on our show. Tell us what you've got on the horizon or planned for December, what our listeners and everyone who's excited about your work can look forward to on the horizon.
Well, the LFRs are going to continue. They're going to be after each and every Leafs game. Podcast is usually uploaded Tuesdays and Thursday nights. So look forward to that. And we got some things on the horizon for Sportsnet. We got a feature called Era Adjusted, where I basically look at some stars of today and compare them to stars of yesterday. Or sometimes maybe I'll take two stars of yesterday, but they're two different kinds of yesterday, so maybe the 90s and the 70s or something, and I'll see how their numbers line up. And those have been pretty popular. People have liked them. I recently wrote about Nicholas Backstrom versus Adam Oates. I wrote about Joe Thornton being one of the best of all time. I wrote about screw Wayne Gretzky's 92-goal record. The best goal-scoring season ever was actually 90-91 Brett Hull. And second best was 07-08 Alex Ovechkin. So just type in era-adjusted Brett Hull into Google, and you should find that one. I thought it was pretty interesting. I didn't expect to find the numbers that I did. And then I think we have a couple other features that we're waiting on, but they're not approved just yet. But I'm excited enough about them that I mentioned them, despite maybe I shouldn't have. I think they'll be really good. I think they'll be really good. I can't wait.
All right. So his name is Steve Dangle Glynn. He's a podcaster. He's a writer. He's a juggler. He's a master of ceremonies. He's a five-tool athlete, and you've got to listen to him. Thank you so much for coming on our show, Steve. We hope to have you back on maybe one of our roundtables where you and I can help defend the cause against those other Habs fans in the world.
Yeah, I look forward to coming on the Mark Bergevin Finally Got Fired episode 12 years from now.
Yeah, it's like he already knows. Come on, it's like he's read our minds and he knows that we've got scripted for him in the days and weeks to come.
We've fired Mark Bergevin, yay! And we're bringing in Michelle Therrien. No!
We're going to use that as a promotional soundbite. You realize that, right? That alone will probably lead to a few extra followers for sure. Steve, thank you so much for your time today. Good luck with your notebook, and we hope to see you soon.
Thanks. I hope to see my notebook soon.